Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, it is me. I am back. And yes, this will be a full-length podcast. My name is Travis Warner, and you are listening to the Growing Freedom Podcast. I've been done podcasting for approximately 2 years now. I've taken a vacation of sorts here for a while, but now I'm getting back into it. There's been people who've talked to me who are interested in me getting back into it. I've had emails and discussions, and I talked to my wife tonight that I really want to get back into it. And this isn't the usual course. I have to go back through and get everything put back together. But for now, I will be redo re. Yeah, I can't talk now. It's been so long. I will be releasing this podcast in a couple different forms. Those of you who are watching it on YouTube, I apologize that I'm not in front of the camera. That's just not how I do things. There will be at times, and you have seen me in the past in front of the camera, but I will be putting various pictures of things that we're talking about, just things to get you to think as you listen to me talk. Those of you who are not interested in listening to a long video slash podcast, that's fine. I'm going to be doing things how it's comfortable for me to do it. So if someone doesn't want that, doesn't like the long stuff, well, you don't have to listen. There will be those who do want to. I'm here to teach. I'm here to give my opinions on a number of things. If you know who I am from the past in the podcast, you know that I'm very fond of gardening, permaculture, things of that sort. And that's the stuff I'll be talking about primarily. There's more into that. I love permaculture. I like what it stands for, but I have not settled with permaculture. I believe where I'm going as far as growing food, it's beyond what is typically known as permaculture. I'm not going to limit myself. Those of you who know who Sepp Pölzer is, in my opinion, has went beyond permaculture. He's went his own way and never really practiced permaculture per se. His book that just came out is entitled Sepp Pölzer's Permaculture. It's his brand, his breed of it. Well, I sort of go the same way. There's things about permaculture or people who call themselves permaculturists that I just don't agree with their understanding. With that said, I totally love permaculture. I love what the majority of people do with it. They're being innovative, they're understanding the natural world that exists everywhere around us. And we look at how to grow a plant. Where is the best teacher? Well, look at how plants grow naturally without human intervention, and they can teach us something. And that aspect of permaculture I totally adore, and I can never get enough. When there's a new video on YouTube or another podcast that somebody has brought out on permaculture, I listen to it, watch it every time because I am totally intrigued, and I love the whole idea of it. But I'm just not settled with that. There's more. I believe permaculture is a springboard into what we are capable of in understanding and learning to cooperate with nature instead of fight against it. I really do not know how long this podcast is going to be. I had no clue. It could be over an hour. It probably will be. It's hard to guess right now. I got a lot on my mind. Like I sort of mentioned earlier, I really miss doing this. I really miss recording and talking to you out there and the feedback that I've gotten from it. And like I said before, when I first started doing podcasts in the past, if I could reach one person and help one person, it was worth doing. Oh, I had done that. And I had to go through some oral surgery in the last fall and get things situated with my health, and I'm pretty much on the mend from that. I just decided to take a little bit longer to refresh, rejuvenate, and focus on what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. I wanted to go in this direction where this was my life. The whole permaculture, gardening, that whole idea is how I make a living. That is what I'm about. That is my passion. And I'm not fair to myself by not pursuing that as my livelihood. So as of right now, I don't know how this is going to work out. I could fall flat on my face on this endeavor, but it is my endeavor to make this my livelihood, however it works out. Part of that could come through the podcast, the website, that kind of stuff. Part of it come through what I'm doing on the land itself that could produce an income. However way it works, I'm going to follow my passion. I've talked about that before with people and on the podcast before, that is my endeavor. Well, now I'm putting my feet underneath me and going. I'm not going to limit myself anymore. Even if I fall on my face, I'm going to stand back up and keep trying. This is something that I've made a decision that I'm going to do. And I believe that it isn't just my decision. I don't know where you stand about God or divine influence, but I believe it is the direction that God wants me to go in life. And that's another thing that I will be talking about here and there. In the past, I haven't put my beliefs into the podcasts all that much. And I felt bad for not doing that. I'm not going to preach to you and tell you that you should or shouldn't. Well, that's your path and what you have to decide that. But I will tell you what I believe, and I will tell you that in my experience in life, that God is real and He has done extraordinary things for me. He's given me the understanding to grasp what this is of permaculture and understand it in a way that I hear the things one time and I grasp it, I understand it. Or some people, they have to learn over and over and over and over. I understand it the first time. It's a divine knowledge that's been given to me, an understanding of how it works. And I don't think that's by coincidence. Anyway, I'm going to be looking through various pictures to sort of keep me on track, because I can go just like it there and talk about various things. One of the things that I want to talk about today is the use of mulches. That it is very important in my mind and almost essential. And the reason I say almost, because everybody can do it how they want to, that's totally fine. But in my opinion, in my experience and experience of others I've witnessed, that if you're going to be doing any kind of gardening, any kind of permaculture type system, any type of organic raising of food, there's going to be a mulch involved in some way, shape, or form. And of course, I advocate everyone putting in a garden, even if it's a small 4 by 4 foot raised bed, to do that. And to make do that right, that in my opinion, you're going to have to put mulch. What that mulch is, well, that could vary. Some people say, don't use this, don't use that. I really don't care what you use. I say put mulch down. In my opinion, I would say the best mulch to put down would be like a moldy hay or a straw, something of that nature. Something to cover the ground, and not to just put it down in a thin manner, but I'm saying 4, 6, maybe 8 inches. In my opinion, I think 8 inches would be really good. If you have 8 inches of straw or hay on your garden, weeds are not going to come up. That's actually going to break down and act as a living compost pile on your garden, and it's going to do wonders. The first couple years, you might not think it's going to work. I'm telling you, if you give it a 5-year run, then you won't ever stop doing it. You'll just keep piling the stuff on. Instead of having to go out and turn your compost every day, all you'll have to do is just keep piling on the compost onto your garden, your kitchen scraps. Put it right onto the garden. Compost in place. Some of the permaculturists have a terminology that's chop and drop. That if you are going to do some mulching out in your forest, your food forest, that when you have extra things out there you need to chop or prune, just drop it right there and it will go back into the soil. It is a very true thing. And it's the same thing when you're cleaning out your garden. When that broccoli plant is just done, well, you can leave it standing right there and it will fall down and it will rot by itself. Or if you think you have to, you can pull it up by the roots and just drop it right there. And when you go and put some more hay or straw on top of that, it will decompose just like you put your kitchen scraps out there. It's all going to work. It's instead of turning a compost pile, why not compost in place? It's not going to hurt your garden doing that. It will enrich it. This is a no-till method also. If you want to think about the positives of doing this, you're not going to have to go rototill. The soil underneath that straw or hay is going to be nice and permeable. It's going to be soft. The worms are going to be making their channels. The water is going to seep down through the deeper roots because of it. One thing I'll advise you to do in planting into a mulch system, you just rake back the mulch a little bit and plant your seeds there. When your seeds come up, they get to a level where you can get the mulch back underneath of them, surround it back around them, and they'll be just fine. You can spot plant how you want to that way. If you want to do a row, you can do it that way. If you want to do in a square foot fashion, you can do it that way. You just keep the ground mulch that keeps weeds down. And not that I am necessarily against weeds. I'll be talking about that in another podcast later on again. Yet there are many beneficial weeds that grow up that you want there. But to keep your crabgrass and things like that down, keep it mulched. And then, again, a couple years, you're going to build a really good soil if at all times, 365 days a year, you keep 8 inches of mulch, preferably, in my opinion, hay, which you can get moldy hay, rotten hay, anywhere for pennies or free, depending on where you look. That is going to offer you the richest, best soil, regardless of what soil you're growing in. It's going to help clay, it's going to help even a rocky soil. It will break down, it will create soil on top of that rocky area. It may take some time to build it up, but it will do it. Specifically, for those who grow tomatoes or cucumbers, vining type things, well, a person can stake them up and grow them on a truss. I like doing that myself. But those of you who prefer to let those things crawl all over the place, and that's fine. I had nothing against that at all. If you have that really thick layer of mulch down, then that cucumber or that tomato is less likely to have issues because it's laying on top of this hay instead of on the soil itself. Just let your mind wander with that one and how that would work. And imagine this here as well. If you're growing potatoes, this is my method I like to do, is I throw those potatoes right on the ground and just cover them with about 8 inches of hay. Let them grow out through the hay. Now, as those potatoes grow, you just keep piling the mulch right around them. And this is what you have to do to harvest. You pull back the hay or the straw, and there the potatoes are, sitting right there for you to do whatever with. You may have to dig down a couple inches, but generally, you're not going to have to do anything but pick up the potatoes up off the ground. So things that vine, like sweet potatoes, your regular potatoes, your cucumbers, tomatoes, you're saving yourself a lot of work. If you don't want to stake things, you don't want to trellis things, this would be the method for you. On that same note, but just shifting over here a little bit different, if you do decide to stake those things up, like tomatoes or cucumbers, you maximize your square footage, which is one of the reasons why you would want to do that. When you stake those things up, it allows you to plant fairly close to the tomato plant. A good for example would be like lettuce. Lettuce likes to be shaded. It doesn't like to be out there in the hot sun. So you could plant some lettuce or something low growing right there within a few inches of the tomato plant. And this brings you into a polyculture or companion planting that offers you the option of not planting in a row. It brings the beneficial insects into more areas, and the insects that would like to munch on one variety, they get confused because there's all this other stuff here and they don't find all the tomato plants because they're not all together. You may have one tomato plant and create a guild around that, things that would like to grow around that and help that tomato to grow, like basil or borage. possibly carrots or beets or whatever you want to grow in that area. And then, oh, 5-6 feet away from there, you'd go put another plant, tomato plant in and grow a variety of things around that. So your bed, your garden beds could be a series of circles. They could be squares, rectangles, whatever odd shape you want to make. That doesn't matter. It allows you to make the garden area look better and not just so mundane straight rows, but allows it to function better. And with the added mulch, you know exactly where to walk, because where you don't see a plant, that's where you walk. So you can keep yourself off of the bed itself. And you can make each bed, each little guild, if you will, whatever size you want to. It makes the vegetable garden look more like a typical flower garden, in my opinion. Anyways, I just want to put a little tidbit out there. If anybody needed that little tidbit of advice, now you have it. Sort of backing up, but not going too far back. One of the reasons I enjoy permaculture is actually implementing some of these things together that I've observed or seen other people try. The whole companion planting thing and the mulch thing really go together pretty good. And just sort of follow my example here if you can. Picture this. If you go out to harvest a typical root crop in open soil, oftentimes there'll be crust in that soil, a carrot or a radish or whatever. It may break off in the soil because it's so compact and so hard on top. Because it's going to dig down there deep and hold on to that thought that root crop is doing that. That's going to help you in your companion planting here in a minute. But if you put some mulch on top of there, it helps keep that ground soft and palatable. Now, when you go to pull that up, it's going to come up so much easier. The ground is soft. You could actually reach your hand down there and just pluck it right out, and it comes right out easy. I found this to be so true with something as simple as a radish. Now, before I go into that too far, one of the things that I find a lot of people do when they just get started in gardening is they plant the various seeds too deep. All you need to do on a seed really is sit it on the ground. It will do what it needs to do. But if you think you have to cover something up, I would say cover up with a little bit of mulch on the smaller seeds. They might not come up how you want to, so just cover them just a little bit. I mean, just enough so you can't see the seed anymore, is what I'm saying here. That little plant, whatever it is, has to come up through everything you put on top of it. For some things, it works better than others. But just a word of advice, for example, with radishes. I think a lot of people plant the radishes way too deep. All you need to do is put maybe a quarter inch of soil on top of them, and they will plop up right through there in a couple days. And then 30 days from there, you'll have a radish to eat. Anyways, back to the polyculture idea. Because those things that have roots, they'll dig down there deep, like a carrot or a parsnip, something like that. They're going to send that big old taproot, that big root, straight down. And what do you think that is doing? Well, that's gathering nutrients from way down deep. Whereas something like a squash has quite shallow roots. Its roots hover along the top. Don't you think that's actually a good thing? They're getting nutrients from various levels, not all the same thing. If you have a bunch of tomato plants all together, they're all trying to compete for that those nutrients that are right there in that spot. But if you have various levels of things, you got some roots like to spread wide, some like to just till a little bit. But when you plant things like a carrot or things that really send down something deep, they help pull that stuff up there. There's other things that companion plants do, but understanding that there is understanding some of the principles of permaculture, where you got various layers and how the layers work. I would definitely advise you to Google search or whatever permaculture layers, understand what that is. Same thing with companion planting. Combine the two things. I'll try to, on the video portion of this, put various pictures that I found around the internet for you to look at as I'm talking about this, that you can see some of these examples. Most of these examples that I'm giving you in these pictures are not what I would do. Unfortunately, I don't have a camera right now or my vegetables up enough to give you an example of what I do. I do have some on my website. If you want to check them out, that's how I do it. But these examples are a beginning. And when I mean a polyculture, I mean you don't know what's planted where next to anything, and I don't really care about what happens with this plant versus that plant because nature will take care of it. I don't care if a pepper and a corn should be planted next to each other because there's something might attack both of them or one might cause the other to have a disease. I don't care about that stuff. I care about let's put the seeds out there and let nature decide what is going to work where. And then I observe that and learn from that. What some catalog or what some expert tells me doesn't necessarily mean that that's what's going to happen on my yard. I can tell you and I can give you advice, but it might work different where you are because of various circumstances. So the best way to learn how to do it where you are is to just go out and do it. A lot of people won't do it how I suggest right now, and I don't do it very much as I should. But just take all your seeds, put them in a bucket, stir them around, and just broadcast them wherever. Some people do this and it works great. To some extent, I've done it. I did it last year. And I'll probably do more of it this year. But last year, I did that quite heavily in some of my greens, lettuce, spinach, kohlrabi. Probably 7 or 8 different things I threw together, trying to come up with some kind of a family. Once you have a family that works, then you can do that quite well. Maybe you find 6 or 7 different things that grow well together in an area and just broadcast a seed there. Maybe cover that area with a little bit of mulch or compost, however you want to do it, and let them grow up through it. It might look like a mess at first, and you may say, well, that doesn't work very good for harvesting. It may or may not. It depends on who you are and how you like to do it. But observe and look at some of these pictures that I have on here and just see what works for you. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm telling you how I do things and in my observation how various things work out. But you do what works for you. If you want to take none of my advice, that's absolutely fine. But I'm giving you the option of trying or learning something new. Some examples of my companion planting this year, I'm trying to think of off the top of my head. We planted onions and potatoes together. Just threw the onions and potatoes in the ground, covered them up with a little bit of straw and leaves that we got last year. They're sort of decomposing fairly thick. We threw it on top of them and they crawled up right through it just fine, both the potato plants and the onions. And so when it's time to harvest those, all I have to do is take a pitchfork or whatever, just pull back the layer on top and just pick the stuff right there. I observe it every couple of days. I go over there and look at it. It's growing beautiful. It is what I could ever comprehended or wanted it to be. It's already doing that and behaving just as I thought it would. A couple other things I've done. I planted radishes in with my zucchini and squashes to help keep, just in case I get attacked by the squash bug. Because the squash bug actually prefers to eat radish leaves. And if you're going to go eat a radish, you can eat radish leaves, but most of us don't. We don't care whether the leaves get damaged, and neither does the radish plant care all that much whether the leaves get damaged. It's going to put its effort into growing that bulb, that radish, so later it can use that energy to make seed. So That's one thing you can, if you can remember. Throw your radishes down with your various squashes. You can throw a lot of radishes down because the seed is very inexpensive there. And you can keep planting radishes around that squash. And the radishes don't seem to mind getting overshadowed or overrun by the squash plant. So, in my opinion and my experience, that has worked well. So that's one of the things that we've done this year, and I've already had success doing that. And I suppose I should mention right here, those of you who don't know what a Three Sisters Garden is, I should probably mention it real quick here. It's been done by Native Americans for ever and ever, it seems like. They call them Three Sisters because it's three different plants that grow together in harmony, and they work for each other. And I'll give you the quick details here and run right through it. You can Google it and you'll understand right away. But for those who don't know, you plant your corn. You let your corn come up a little bit. At the same time, you probably can plant your squash. A running squash or a watermelon, a pumpkin, something of that nature. And as the corn grows up and probably gets 6-8 inches tall, go and plant your pole beans at the base of the corn. Obviously, those pole beans are going to climb right up the corn. And if they don't start right away, you can sort of put them there and they'll start climbing it. And they'll use that corn as support to climb. Well, what the pole bean is doing, it is supplying nitrogen to the soil. Because there's little nitrogen nodules that are on leguminous plants, which are beans and peas. And they actually add nitrogen. They take it from the air, put it into the soil. And we all know that corn is a gross eater of nitrogen. It sucks a lot of nitrogen away. So there's already a good reason why to plant your beans with your corn. Well, to keep your weeds away from your beans that are sensitive to weeds and the corn, you plant your squash. What the squash is going to do, it's going to shade out. It's going to act like a cover crop, like a mulch, over top of the whole area and keep your weeds down and keep the temperatures down so your beans and corn at the roots aren't getting too warm. Those big giant squash leaves, that's what they're doing. So the three plants are working in harmony with each other. They don't hurt each other. Actually, them being together help each other. If you understand, just think and go through what you're planting. Do some research. You can find that there are other ways other plants work in harmony this way. One quick thought on more companion plantings. Planting beets and kohlrabi together. Always a good idea. They just work well together. If you plant beets, they are tilling up the soil. The kohlrabi grows. That little bulb on top of the soil. For some reason, you put those two plants together, and they grow together like a charm. I started doing that last year. I did it again this year, and expect the same results. These are just some of the things on top of my head that I've already done this year. Okay, that I guess that wouldn't technically be a polyculture, but now I can go back and look and realize, after the kohlrabi and the beets get going, what do I want to plant around there with them? Do I want to set my tomato plants near there? Do I want to go and plant what next to them? It all depends on what you want to do. But now, I have those two things planted together. So if I want to go back and plant radishes or carrots, well, let's go find out whether they work together or not. I'm not saying they do. But do the research. You know, companion planting. We have this wonderful thing called the internet. What does it say about planting this plant with that plant? I did a podcast, 3 or 4 of them, over a year ago, went into detail. And hopefully I'll be able to open those archives up here pretty quick so you can get that. I really don't want to do the podcast again, but I may. I may go back through and do another one and give examples to show people on how these different guilds or plant families can be planted together. On a quick note here, I wanted to mention something my dad and I have been working on is a trellis system that is interchangeable and can become a greenhouse. It's sort of a hoop house, but at times that we can take the plastic off when we don't want it there, and then in the fall we can put it back. And we actually have 2 4-foot-wide beds on each side of the trellis, and a walkway in the middle where there's a walk path. So we can plant directly into those beds, and we can hang things onto the trellis itself, and the things crawl up it, put pots there, whatever. And I'll be getting some examples out for you. And what we're trying to do is develop a system that we can tell you need this, 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 and this for this size, or this for that size. So all you have to do is get the stuff, put it together, build it, and you'll have the exact same success that we have. That's what we're working on. This, that in the right time of the year, you use it as a starter greenhouse. At other times of the year, once you take the plastic off, then it becomes your trellis. And then the fall, or even through the winter, when you want to grow things in it, cold-hardy crops like peas or beets or broccoli, things of that nature that can handle the really cold, kale or lettuce, then you can do that. You can put that plastic right back on top of it. So we're working on that. We're working on getting that. So it's a cookie-cutter approach on how to build it, exactly what you need. And I will be getting pictures. There are some on my website. We started last year, but we've definitely improved upon that by now. And hopefully we'll get a package together. And maybe that's some of the profits that we'll make to try to make a living is by selling those. We'll have to wait and see on what happens with that. Sort of jumping backwards here a little bit again. Just thinking off the top of my head. Some of the things I wanted to talk about. We've definitely been working on getting more the perennial things into our garden. Asparagus, horseradish, rhubarb, whatever. But also the fruiting trees, nut trees that I'm really, really trying to kick my butt into gear and getting more of that stuff in. So some of the things I want to talk about based on that part of the subject matter would be putting together a system itself where you use a guild, if you want to call it that, to help those fruit trees get along, and to not just make an orchard out of it, but make a, I guess to copy a phrase, to make a food forest out of it. There are things like onions and garlic that you can grow right underneath an apple tree or a pear tree or peach or whatever. And you can possibly put strawberries underneath there. Planting various legumes to fix nitrogen into the soil. They'll help everything around there. Some flowers to make it look nice, but at the same time to bring the insects in. The beneficial ones, the bees and the predatory wasps. Things of that nature that it work makes the whole system work together. And actually, if you think about it, it'll actually look better than just an apple tree standing there. And when you have, let's say, off the top of my head, daylilies planted there. That'll be a perennial. They'll come up every year right next to that apple tree. And if they get shaded a little bit, they won't care all that much. And daylilies also, if you get an heirloom variety that is edible, that there's edible parts to daylilies. Some people believe the whole plant, but I know the petals themselves are, and they actually are quite tasty. Even a young apple tree or fruit tree, you could use as a trellis for pole beans. They wouldn't hurt it a bit. Just let yourself go. Study these things. Let's see. One of the benefits of allowing other plants to grow around your apple tree. One, they're not going to suck too many nutrients from there, especially if you are putting things to fix nitrogen into your soil. But they're going to act as a ground cover to keep the ground in that area cool. And when you have dew, those plants will help collect that dew and drip that down, and that'll be beneficial for the apple tree itself to help get it going. There's various things that you can plant around a little apple tree like that in an area. if you're in an area that can grow the gomi or gumi, however you pronounce it, it's one of those little berries. They're highly nutritious. Anyway, something like that that fixes nitrogen, that creates a food for you, planted right next to an apple tree or two or three of them there. Well, let's say you want to plant a nut tree. You want to plant a black locust. Well, nothing grows next to a black locust, many people think. Well, you got things like raspberries and blackberries that will love to grow there. So you got to think outside the box a little bit and what will work. Don't worry about so much what won't work. Find out what will. And it's not just you're doing it for you. You're doing it for the same reason that I do this podcast. You're doing it for others. You're doing it for your legacy, for your family, that they'll have something that you can give them that will last for generations. If you think about how long some of these big, giant trees will last, some of these giant nut trees. Well, you might not see a black walnut come off that tree for years, but your grandkids will. So you got to think about if you're in an area where you could do something like that. There's things that you can get productivity earlier, for sure. But it's up to you how you want to look at that and what you want to do. If you have the room, I say absolutely go for it. And toward the end of the podcast, I want to mention it now, I'm going to be letting you know and contacting me some of the ways that I'm willing to help you, serve you, and that kind of stuff. So make sure that you hear the end of this, even if you are interested into this part, I suppose. Next here, we're going to talk about critters. I know I'm talking about lots of things in this episode, and we'll go back through and try to visit as many of these as possible in depth. But it's been a while since I've done one of these, and I'm excited about doing it. So I'll just put it out there today. I guarantee I'm going to hear people contact me and how do I deal with this critter, how I deal with that critter. And so today we're going to talk about how to deal with those critters that want to come in and eat everything in your garden like they did to me last year. And what I'm going to do about it, what I am doing about it, and what you can do about it. There's always this thing called the fence that in some aspects will work okay. Especially for some of the little critters. That's fine. But what I want you to think about outside the box, and you can Google and research on how to put a fence in for whatever critter you're talking about. I'm not going into that. I'm talking about, well, what can you do with that fencing that you're putting around to protect that? You could do an espalier of an apple or whatever you want to put there. And eventually, that plant itself will become the fence. One of the things that come to my mind real quick is Osage orange. It's not a food source, but what it is an impenetrable layer. If you take and cross those plants as they're growing, and they'll grow for, they'll turn into a tree eventually if you let them. You plant Osage orange in a row, and you weave the branches back and forth as they're growing up, and you got to use gloves to do it because you'll find out why. That stuff has got thorns, and it will make you want to curse at it and everything under the sun other than call it a good thing. But that's exactly why you use that as a living fence. And if you want to have a fence there temporarily around it to help it get growing, to help it stand up, that's one option that you can do. And you can weave it that a person will not go through, a bear will not go through there, a horse won't jump it, a pig won't go through it. It actually becomes something, unless there's a fire that burns it down, there's no absolutely way that any shape, shape, or form, that unless you have a dozer, that are you going through that hedge. And eventually it'll grow tall enough that horses, deer, whatever, won't jump over it. Yes, there's a waiting period there, but there is a, for sure, way right there that you can keep the critters out of your garden area. Or off your property entirely if you want them to be. There are various other shrubs that you could do that with. You could just plant lots of blackberries in the area. The deer will eat some. The wild roses would be another thing that you could plant. If you plant them thick enough, the deer aren't going to walk through there. People say, yeah, they won't. They really won't. And if they do, it'll be very few, and it won't happen as very often. You'll understand this about deer. They are a creature of habit, and they are lazy creatures. They don't like to have to jump if they don't have to. And if you blockade where they're going, they'll eventually learn to go around it, and they'll find somebody else's property to go mess with. And so redirect them. If you have to, plant a cover crop of something they think they want. That'll lead them away from where your garden is. Put up a blockade. Teach them to go where you want them to go and not into your vegetable garden. Small critters are the same way. It's actually quite inexpensive to put a small fence up for rabbits. Just make sure you get it into the ground so they don't dig underneath of it. Things like raccoons. Well, I think the whole deer fence that you build will take care of the raccoons as well, other than they're a little bit more clever. But there is a way on top of a fence that if you sort of make it wobbly, that's not very sturdy, but it is sharp and it's cumbersome, that raccoons will tend to leave it alone. And if you really want to keep the critters out of your garden after you get it fenced in, we have this wonderful, wonderful invention that God gave us called a dog. You put the dog inside of the fence, you have no more worries about little critters getting in there. We have one out by the garden right now. He even sees a deer, he's barking his head off. Or any other type of critter. Enough said. He's not in the garden, he's next to the garden. But as far as the deer know, that they don't want to mess with him being there. And that has solved that problem. And he also gets to be a family pet at the same time. So it's a win-win scenario. It keeps the critters out of your garden. There's plenty of room for them to eat other stuff that are out in the woods and the fields around. But in that one little area, that's where how we were going to keep them out this year. It's worked so far so good. Again, my plans are to get the Osage orange specifically. Also be planting various hedges in areas to keep deer from going in through an area where it'll also give them a food source on the side that they can get to. I want to put a hedge of hazelnuts, fairly thick, that the deer won't be able to walk through them, but on the side that they can get to the hazelnuts, they can have the nuts on that side of the tree, and on my side of the tree, I'll get them. So a living hedge that's productive is also is always an option, a way that you want to go about it. One of the things that I see that people that have done that I agree with, excuse me, is I like the trend of people putting small ponds or frog ponds in and amongst their vegetable gardens. I think that is ingenious. I think that is awesome. If you want to get rid of those pesky insects, we're talking about getting rid of pests that want to eat your garden. Well, how do you do that? Well, you bring in the things that'll eat them versus going to get a spray or something that'll kill all the insects. Why not invite some snakes and frogs and things that'll come in and eat the things that you don't want there? Well, how do you get them there? Well, you put little toad houses here throughout your garden, little shelters with rocks where they can go and hide if they need to. Put little ponds in, they don't have to be very big. And if you're worried about mosquitoes, put your nice mosquito dunk inside the little pond. You don't have any mosquitoes to worry about. And we have one decent sized pond, one small pond. And it works like a charm. There are always toads, frogs, snakes, this stuff wandering around. And they're not going to do anything but help your garden out. So that's one thing I want to talk about real brief. That if you have thought about it or haven't thought about it, you can go get one of those pre-made formed ponds, put rocks around to make it look real nice, or however you want to do it. You do the research, put a couple of them in various places in your garden. Your garden will look nicer, and it'll function that much better because you have this habitat that you've created for these critters that will end up being your friends. They're free labor. Think about that. Oh, now, let's see. On to some of my pet peeves about what people do. If it's you, I'm not getting on you about it. Society has taught us to do things this way, and it's going to take time for society to learn a different way. My biggest pet peeves is when I walk out my front door or my back door, I see this green thing called grass. I know there's a purpose for it, and having a nice lawn can be a nice lawn, and there's reasons to have one. With that said, if you just try to imagine, if everyone who has a nice green lawn that has the sprinklers on it, they fertilize, they take care of it, do this and that, they take that grass away and turn all that into a productive food system that provides food for you, your neighbors, everyone. Can you imagine how many people that would feed? If just in the United States that we would turn our lawns into gardens, it doesn't have to just be food, it can be flowers. But if we would instead grow a garden, when I talk about gardening, it's not just vegetables. I like having the flowers in with my vegetables in with the flowers, because that's the way that nature does it. It just mixes and matches and throws it together, and that's what we're trying to do, is mimic what nature is doing. So if you can imagine, there's areas that you can have set apart for your lawn, for your campfire, where you got your little circle there that you want a lawn around that. That's absolutely fine. But when we have 1 to 2 acre pieces of nothing but grass, that's not accomplishing anything except for taking up resources where that could be planted into something. Let's say you wanted chickens, and let's say you dedicate part of that to grow the food for the chickens. Plant some sunflowers out there for them, or some millet, whatever you would want to feed them. Plant some trees out there, maybe a fruit that you don't care so much for, where it becomes food for that animal. One of the things I want to talk about real brief here, and I'll just mention it now. People always say don't plant seeds you get off your apple tree. I got apple trees growing here on my property. They say don't plant that from seed. You never know what you're going to get. Well, you might get something good. Just the same. Why not try and put that seed into the ground and find out what happens? If it's a good apple, well, then you get to eat it. If it's a bad apple, well, maybe you could use it for a juice. Or maybe you could use it as food for your livestock, for your pigs or horses or whatever. We need to stop looking at what doesn't work and just try, learn from some trial and error. And what happens if 1 out of 10 of those trees turns into a productive apple tree? Then you have one more tree than you had, and it costs you nothing other than putting this seed into the ground and see what would happen from it. I'm going to be doing that this year with some peaches. Well, peaches I know will work, because still in a fruit, you tend to can do that. So I got some peach pits last year for some peaches. I went and pruned the guy's trees for him. He had different varieties, and he sent over some peaches last year. So I took those peaches, I threw them haphazardly into a pile out by a tree so I wouldn't forget where they were, let them overwinter so they would do their thing. And now we'll be putting them into the ground and just see what happens. What's going to happen is we'll get some peach trees that'll come up, and we'll let the hardiest ones, best ones grow and see what happens. And what will happen in a couple years, we'll have peaches on those trees, and chances are they'll be a lot like the peaches that we ate last summer. So that's something that you can do. Especially if there are things like peaches, stone fruit, apricots, of that sort that grow in your area. you could probably get away with taking those pits, researching how to do it. You want to have them chilled for X amount of time, and then plant them after they've been chilled. So now you could have and plant a tree from seed that will cost you nothing other than possibly gathering it or bartering for it or giving a couple dollars to pick some extra peaches or apricots that somebody has and just taking the seeds out or even asking people. Because most people, what will they can do with their pits? They'll throw them away. Well, will you save those for me? I want to see if I can grow them. They'll say, yeah, well, sure. It won't work. But they don't know what you already know that I just told you. It will work. It will produce a tree. And it will create peaches. And you'll be able to eat them. And in the worst case scenario, you'll be able to make peach juice and can it or whatever you want to do with it. Some good peach cobbler sounds good right now. Speaking of various different fruits. Where I live here, I love eating kiwi, and the fuzzy ones you get at the store, well, I can't grow them here very good. It's not that I can't. I think I can actually find a way to figure it out. If Sepp Holzer can grow citrus up in the mountains in Austria, where it's bitter cold, then I think I can grow a kiwi here. Well, anyway, I am going to take a shot, and I know it will work. I'm going to be growing the hardy kiwi for sure. And hardy kiwi, you eat it like a grape. It doesn't have this furry stuff. Research it online to find it. Find them anywhere. One of my plans is to get a trellis system, a big arbor put up so they can crawl on it and have a permanent system there that all I have to do is go harvest. Because I know once kiwi get set and get growing, you can get a lot a fruit off of just a few plants, and that's one of the things that I hope to have in abundance here in a couple of years. It just so many thoughts started in my head as I look through some of these pictures that are here. There's an arbor I'm looking at right now, and I think of, oh, that looks like my kiwi arbor someday. Then maybe during part of the year I'll let pole beans grow up with the kiwi, just to add some nitrogen into the ground where they grow, some more companion planting. And that's the thought process. Just sort of start looking at a picture, thinking about, well, what could I do if that was here? How would I do that? And go for it. Don't let someone tell you that you can't do it. Try it. If it doesn't work, then try it again a different way until it works for you. One of the things that just came to me that you might want to try, those of you who like eating salsa, try planting a salsa garden this year. It's not too late, especially here in the north, and it's probably not too late in most places to find out when you can grow various varieties of these things and get them into the ground. Peppers and tomatoes grow at the same time. They're both in the nightshade family. So those two things, so you can plant some peppers next to your tomatoes. And you got some cilantro. They will grow next to them just fine. A couple onions in the area. Some garlic, possibly. You usually plant garlic in the fall and harvest it in the following summer. But maybe you can plant some garlic and harvest early. It'd be small, but it'll still be there. If you're into black beans in your salsa, well, here's a clue. You probably can go get some of those dried black beans in the store wherever you get them from. You're going to put in your salsa. And poke them in the ground and chances are a little plant's going to pop up. And you let that thing sit there until the beans are dry again. And then you have more black beans to put into your salsa. I don't know what you want, what you like in your salsa. But other than the salt, pretty much you should be able to grow it in your vegetable garden. That's just a thought. Plant what you like to eat. If you want, some people like corn in their salsa, there you go. Plant a couple, I'll say a package anyway, because you need corn fairly close to each other to cross or to pollinate itself, because it's wind pollinated. Plant some corn, fairly go by the package, or if you want specifics on how to plant corn, get a hold of me. It's not really difficult. And just experiment. That's one of the things that I'm trying to get across. Don't let there be limits. So many people who are into gardening, into this framework, say, well, you can't do this, or you shouldn't do this. Well, in some areas that can be true, and in others it's absolutely not true. It's just their opinion. Genetically modified organisms, well, those are always bad. It's always nasty. It's always not good to eat that or have that, to grow that, or to even like companies to create that. But whether you should plant something next to this, or you should mulch, you shouldn't mulch, that's all opinion. Don't let somebody's opinion determine what you're going to do. Do the research yourself, come up to you with your own conclusion, and then follow that. Don't let someone tell you that you can't do it. It won't work. Find out. They might be right. Or they might very well be wrong. They tell Sepp Holzer that he can't grow citrus up in the mountains of Austria. But guess what? He's growing citrus up in the mountains of Austria. So you can't always say that it can't be done. I'm bound to determine that I'm going to grow some of that stuff here where I live in Michigan. And I'm going to find a way to get it done. I would love to be able to grow coffee here. Everything says that I can't do it without sitting in a greenhouse. You know what? That's one of my things. I'm going to figure out how. If I can weather it this way or put a rock wall behind it to retain heat. If I can find some way to grow it and keep it going, I'm going to do it. I know I can grow a date palm here in Michigan if I mulch it. I can even grow figs here if I take care of it right. There's a lot of things that right on the borderline, most people say, well, you can't grow that here. Well, yeah, I can. I just have to know how to take care of it. Create a microclimate that protects it from freezing winds. So maybe plant it on the south side of the house where it's protected primarily. And it's warmer there. And make sure I mulch the roots really good on whatever it is. And I just might be able to do something they say that can't be done. Like grow an olive tree in Michigan. Who knows? Maybe they're right that I can't do it. But just trying and feeling once or twice doesn't mean that they're right that I can't do it. It just means it hasn't been done yet. That's one of the reasons why I love the whole idea of what permaculture is. People are trying new things. They're coming up with new ideas. They're saying, they say I can't do it, but there you go. A good example. What's her name? Who came up with years ago with the whole mulching idea. Mulching the entire garden. Ruth Stout. If you haven't read her books, I definitely recommend it. The first one is Green Thumb. How to Have a Green Thumb Without an Aching Back. Check that one out. The second book goes into more detail on some of the stuff. But they told her back in the 50s or whatever it was that she was nuts for covering her garden with straw that way. And guess what? She was right. All the experts were wrong. She was right. So be willing to go out on a limb. Yes, I'm talking about gardening, but be willing to go out on a limb in other areas of your life. I'm going out on a limb now saying that I'm going to find some kind of way to live a permaculture homesteading lifestyle. Where my income is going to come from? Well, I got to figure that part out. But I'm going to do it. Why? Because it's my passion. And I believe the quotes that I hear about, if you're not doing what you're passionate about, you're not really living. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And if you don't love what you're doing, then you need to stop and start doing what you love. And I agree with that, and I am going forward in that mindset that I'm going to find some way to get this done. And I'm going to keep believing in it when everybody says you can't do it, there's no way to do it that way, I'm going to say, Well, I'm going to keep trying. And I'm going to keep trusting that I can accomplish it. And I know that I have God on my side, and He's going to find some way to get me through, to help me through. He works in mysterious ways, and I believe that it can be done. I definitely could go on talking about a whole bunch more. I already can see that I'm over an hour right now, so I need to wrap it up here pretty quick, as soon as I can, just because an hour is probably about good enough. But I could blab on forever, which is why I'm doing it, because I love talking about the subject, and I can just keep going. I mentioned that I wanted to talk about being able to help whomever. I definitely am willing to do that, and eventually I'll figure out some kind of system that works out the best for everybody. As of now, get a hold of me. If you're watching this on YouTube, go to my webpage. There's a link there on how to contact me. It goes directly to my email, and I will respond to your emails. For those who I have not responded to your emails already, I apologize. I've been extremely busy and just negligent and haven't done it. So I apologize for not answering your emails. I will try to do better on that one. What I plan to be doing here, starting very soon right now, is I am here to answer your questions to help you along. Am I going to give you the perfect permaculture diagnosis on how to take care of and do a certain project to the best of my ability? But I'm not giving you the permaculture answer. I do not teach permaculture. I enjoy permaculture. I enjoy learning about it. But I don't teach it in probably directly will I ever teach it. I'll teach pieces of it here and there because I believe in certain aspects of it. But I do not ever plan to teach permaculture as it's understood. What opinion you're getting from me, advice you're getting from me, designing you're getting from me is a complex system that I would have to sit and talk to you for hours for you to understand it. It's permaculture mixed with all kinds of other ideas and understanding. It's a consulting part of what I'm doing that is absolutely honest with you, that I can't give a cookie cutter approach to everyone because everybody's situation is different. That's why I can't give you a permaculture answer, because it may not work for your situation. You may not be willing to dive completely into what permaculture says that you should or shouldn't do. Well, neither am I, necessarily. When someone comes to me and wants to consult with me on what to do or how to tackle this idea, I'm going to give you my opinion and what I would do. And based on what my research, my understanding, and my practice, and not just me, I will go to those and ask those on your behalf and find out a consensus, if I have to, what the solution is. I will do the research for you. Now, if I'm doing the research for somebody, then there probably should be some compensation given. And we'll go through that in the future and figure out what that's going to be. But as any consultant, whether it be a garden consultant, medical consultant, financial consultant, consultants get paid for consulting. And so that's what I'm telling you, that I will be definitely opening, that there's multiple ways to do it. Now, if I have to come to you, if you live in Timbuktu and I have to go there, well, guess what? You have to provide the airfare, ground fare, shelter, whatever it is for me to get there, because I don't have the money, nor do I want to have the money to do that. I am definitely able to consult based on pictures. If you want to take a video of an area, then we can correspond back and forth on what I can do, what I would do. I do have software where I could possibly draw on a picture and show you what I would do, or give you an example of pictures that I can find. They would show you what I would do with a certain situation. Anyways, what I'm saying is, that is open for business. I will be doing that. Some things, just send me an email. If you have a question, I'll probably just answer it. If you want a deep consulting on how to start doing something, we'll work on that. Email me and maybe you can make a suggestion on what it should cost. If I would go put a garden in for somebody around here, it would cost money. Because, well, I'm not going to do the work for free, nor would you. So, if you're consulting me on how to do this, we'll work it out. Eventually, there'll be some kind of a table put up. But I do have the experience. I do have the understanding. I do have the knowledge that many of you are seeking. Even though you're already in permaculture and you're trying to find a way to practice it, I understand it. I'm practicing it. I'm doing it. I'm having the success. And I'll be documenting everything I possibly can do and get it out for you so people can see what I'm doing. There are many people who are teaching permaculture. Some are doing, some are isolated in their own little world and are not showing people what they're doing. My endeavor is to show each and every one of you what I'm doing, how to do it, and help you do what you want to do in the best way it works for you. I can't cookie cut what I'm doing and put it on your property because that won't work. But if I were living there, this is what I would do, kind of consulting. This is what I'm doing for you. I'll give an example. Eventually, the property will be open up for people to come visit and learn from the property itself. This is my passion. This is my life. This is what I'm going to do. You may want to call it permaculture. Someone might look at it and call it permaculture. I am not calling it permaculture, partially because I'm not going to pay the money to take a permaculture design course when I already understand. I'm already practicing and doing it, much like Sepp Holzer. I don't want to be limited by a name anyway. That's another reason why I'm not taking a design course. I could go online and take one. I could go about 300 miles from here and take one. I don't want to give up what I'm doing. I don't want to stop practicing to go have someone show me how to do what I'm already doing. This is what permaculture is about. You observe, then you interact. Well, I've observed for years and years and years on this thing called permaculture and organic gardening and sustainable living, whatever you want to call it, and observed and observed and observed and observed, and I've practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced. I don't need someone to give me a certificate. Fine. I can't say that I'm teaching you permaculture. Fine. I don't care. I'm helping you design what's going to work for you on your individual property, regardless whether somebody else says it should be or shouldn't be that way. I'm going to help you accomplish it in the way that you think it should be accomplished. I will be there to guide you if I think and suggest, well, I don't know if that would work if you put that there, if you do that that way, and that might not work very good. But if you want to do it, go ahead and do it that way. I'm just here to consult. Whether you take my advice or don't take my advice, that is absolutely up to you, and I will not be offended if you don't take my advice. That's what I'm saying. So those of you who see this on YouTube, I suppose you can leave me a comment there. I don't care for using YouTube's chat back and forth stuff. I prefer the email because everything's all in one place. My email is growingfreedompodcast@gmail.com. I'll probably put that link down in the bottom somewhere of the YouTube video. I also believe this show will be posted on the website for you to download it from there. Eventually, I'll get back up onto iTunes and we'll be back into business. But as my motto has always been, podcasting We're growing freedom one step at a time, planting seeds for better tomorrow. That's what I'm doing for my life in this endeavor to figure out how to do this for a full-time living. And helping you to find that freedom that you're seeking in your life. That's what I'm about. That's why I'm here, to help you. I don't care how many views I get on YouTube or how many people download it. If this message is for you, and if I'm here to help you in any way that I can help you, that's what I'm here for. With all that said, it's been wonderful to be back here again, speaking to the world. Multiple countries it was before I sort of went to semi-retirement for a little while. From Australia, the other side of the world, all the way around and back again. 70, 80 countries. It still is awe-striking to think about the people in 80 countries have heard me talk and care about what I'm talking about, etc. So I don't know what to say other than thank you for listening. Those of you who are catching me again and this time around, welcome back. I am here to stay, God willing, as long as I can keep doing this. It is my passion. It is what I'm doing. And I'm going to follow it the rest of my life. Again, God willing. And I hope that your life is blessed by what I'm doing, that I can teach you and help you. If it's not about money for me, yes, I need to create an income. It's about helping you the best way that I can, because I care. I don't care for people in some aspects that some people do, but I care about the well-being. I care about your future, your children's future. I care about this country that I live in, and I believe that if we come together and work together, that things that are wrong can be repaired. There are multiple subjects I'll be talking about in the future, and ways that we can help each other, and ways we can focus our direction focus our attention into the right direction, and stop letting the powers that be dictate us and tell us that we should be a certain way, when we know deep down in our heart that there's a right way to do things, and we need to follow that conscience that we have, that common sense that tells us, well, this is the right way to do this, and we need to trust in that. That very well could be the creator of all things talking to you, saying, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to stop doing this, you need to do that. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm telling you, listen to your conscience. Listen to wisdom and what you should do with your life. And I believe that if you follow what you believe, you follow what is right and true, that you will live a wonderful life. Not that bad things don't happen. They do happen to everyone. But you will look back and say, wow, what a ride I had in my life. I'm glad I took that advice and decided to follow my dreams, to follow what I knew was for me in this world. And it may not be in the gardening realm like it is for me, but there's those people out there who that is. They want to be the homesteader. They want to be that person they believe they were born into this world to be. If that's you, welcome aboard. If it's not, stay tuned on what you can learn, whichever way it is. It's been great being back. Thank you for listening, and this has been Travis Warner with another edition of the Growing Freedom Podcast. As always, growing freedom one step at a time and planting seeds for a better tomorrow. God bless.